I refuse to live in a world where they serve quesadillas on the wrong color plate.
Hey, we got parking meters, man, and sliced peanut butter.
It's thrown us back out carrying this sorry excuse of a podcast all season.
Oh no, it's my turn, isn't it? Hello and welcome back to Sports Flicks, Just Give Us Clicks. My name is Philip Boone. I am the host for the month of June. And today we are talking about the 1996 classic movie, Space Jam.
When the world's greatest athlete, Michael Jordan, teams up with the world's best loved cartoon character, Bugs Bunny, you won't believe your eyes.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
You heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team.
Ready?
Yeah!
Doc.
Yeah.
You kick it in here.
You go to the hole.
Bill.
And dominate.
We on defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I don't play defense.
Warner Brothers presents Jordan.
Bucks.
Bunny.
Special delivery.
Together, they just might save the world. Space Jam. You've never seen anything like it.
What is your history with the movie Space Jam? What is your history with Michael Jordan? Take me back to the mid-90s. Where were you when this movie came out?
Let's see, 96, I was in middle school. Jordan at that point was not a player that I rooted for necessarily, but definitely had a healthy respect of his abilities. So I definitely wanted to watch Space Jam, as also as a fan of the Looney Tunes. I would say at that age, I was probably more of a Looney Tunes guy than like a Mickey Mouse Disney guy. And I enjoyed it actually, you know, as a kid. I was like 13 years old, probably 12 or 13. It's a good fun movie for the family. I thought it was kind of ridiculous that there was literally nothing but dunks in the entire basketball game against the Monstars. I mean, you didn't see a lot of pull-up jumpers or three-point shots, which is foreign to today's NBA.
No mid-range game whatsoever. Yeah,
which is funny because at that point in Jordan's career, I mean, I think that movie was made, I think it was right after, had he already won the first one after he came back from baseball?
No.
No, it was made, I think, the summer after they lost to the Magic in the playoffs.
But that was 95. They won in 96.
No, but it was made in the offseason between those two seasons, if I'm not mistaken.
So he had already came back. But that stage of his career, Jordan was less the high-flying, dunking on people guy as he was more of like the lethal assassin, the mid-range, you know, turnaround jumper kind of guy. So that was interesting. But it's a kids movie, so of course kids all love dunks. So it just makes sense. But it was fun. It was a good, fun movie. Good for the family.
Come on, bud. I mean, you can't have I Believe I Can Fly jumping, you know, mid-range jumpers. You got to fly, man. That's what the song
is. Can you not just mix in a couple?
No.
Especially
because, like, Patrick Ewing wasn't really known for slamming on people either.
There were one or two by Jordan that were jump shots, but they were – that was it. It was literally one or two, but – and all the Monstars were nothing but dunks. Of course, they are like 11'9". So
I'm just looking forward to Space Jam 2 when we have all these stretch fours out there shooting threes. It'll be exciting.
That's actually what I was just saying. I was like, now I finally understand why LeBron got the role for Space Jam 2. Because if it was Seth Curry, it would just be him shooting three-pointers, you know, from, you know, mid-court. At least, you know, LeBron, I guess, would actually maybe go and dunk, you know, the shoulder.
And then when he flops and they call a charge on the Monstar, it'll be awesome. That'll be how the game ends. He falls down, fakes a shoulder injury, and then they go and, you know.
Poke in the eye.
Wow. Steph Curry punches one of them in the face.
Well, knowing
which,
LeBron.
Speaking of which.
Knowing LeBron, 30 minutes of Space Jam 2 is going to be him just laying on the court in pain.
Well, my hope would be that they actually had a working air conditioner, you know, while they were shooting Space Jam 2. So, you know, you don't just see LeBron cramping up on the sideline and he's actually participating.
Speaking of which, is anybody concerned by the lack of foul calls in the movie Space Jam?
Oh, it was totally legal.
They literally were jumping and hanging on Michael Jordan as he was extending his arm out.
Hanging on Michael Jordan, man, they stomped Sylvester on the
court. Hey,
they completely flattened old
Newman. Wayne Knight's character got flattened and then blown back to his size.
Yet Marvin the Martian didn't call any fouls. It was, he definitely let him play, that's for sure.
You think about it, he's a Martian. He's kind of biased.
He swallowed the whistle.
Marvin the Martian is the best ref because he's unbiased, because he's a Looney Tune, but he's also a Martian. So he's both of them.
No whistle happy Joe Crawford.
You know, I didn't think about that till just now, but that's a good point. That's probably why they had him be the ref for them.
He's a double agent.
But he has no face, you know, so how is he supposed to blow a whistle, guys? I mean, come on.
Right. He doesn't have a face you can see.
Yeah, right.
There you go. But
is he supposed to have a face? Is that
never
a shadow?
Never one that you actually see, I don't believe.
You people are blowing my mind with this whole idea. So you think it's a shadow. I've always thought that Marvin the Martian just doesn't have a face.
No, I think the mask like shadow is supposed to like shadow what he really looks like.
Maybe he's just really ugly and he's trying to hide it. Thanks for bringing it up.
Thanks for being a jerk.
Sorry, Marvin.
Bud mentioned his history with the movie and with Jordan in the 90s. What is everybody else's history with the movie?
I remember going to the theater and seeing this, you know, with my friends. The movie came out, I think, in like the holiday time, because I remember it was cold. But as far as like Michael Jordan goes, you know, I never rooted for him once. And that was kind of the oddball thing. I remember, you know, after the second three-peat, my dad actually turning to me and going, "Well, there you go. It's history with you rooting against him every inch of the way." I remember watching the movie as a kid, and I've never really watched it again. This was kind of interesting to me because when I watched it with Michelle a couple weeks ago, I remember some of the movie, but really I don't remember any of it. So it was almost like watching an entirely new movie again, which was kind of cool.
Mine's probably pretty similar to both you guys in the fact that I didn't root for Jordan. Now, I did like in this movie, my favorite team at the time was the Charlotte Hornets. So I like that Muggsy Bogues and Larry Johnson were both kind of in it, you know, as part of the Monstars, even though they didn't have real huge roles or whatever. But I did like that. I didn't cheer for Jordan. I don't remember if we saw this movie originally in the theaters or not. I was about 14-ish at the time, so I was borderline maybe too old if it would have just been a Looney Tunes movie, but because it was kind of also mixed in as almost like a little bit of a Jordan biopic in a way as well, you know, it kind of, I felt it brought up sort of the street cred more or less of the movie. I mean, it didn't feel like a kid's movie, even though it was also a kid's movie, you know, you felt like because it had Jordan and these NBA stars that it was also kind of cool enough to watch like in junior high, you know, so that's kind of my experience with it. So
it was kind of a Jordan biopic in a way, you know. Yeah. It really does depict, you know, how he unretired, you know, with the spaceship landing and him coming out onto the minor league baseball field, I mean, and saying, "Ah, you know what? I've had
very true to life."
Yeah. Extremely very true.
By the way,
I remember that spaceship freaking out.
Would that measure up to the leading sports center test?
I think that would lead.
If Michael Jordan arrived at a minor league baseball game in a literal spaceship.
Well, I think Michael Jordan came back, led sports center, right? So, I mean, if he did it in a spaceship, even more so.
I think Sean Bradley actually having skills that an alien wants to steal would possibly lead sports center to. It's just on the shock factor.
Which, by the way, isn't it kind of tragic that Sean Bradley like had a car hit him when he was riding his bike? Now he's paralyzed. Isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah. As I was watching the movie,
I thought of when I saw him in this movie.
it's always been so shocking to me that Sean Bradley's one of the stars in the movie when he wasn't a star in real life. Then I felt really bad about thinking that, because I was like, oh yeah, he got paralyzed a few months ago.
Well, he's only in the movie because Christian Laettner turned it down.
He has the one skill you can't teach, though, which is height.
And being blonde.
Does this go back to Celtic pride?
And being Mormon. Actually, you can teach that, I believe.
Which, watching this movie again, I kind of noticed where he said, like, he went on a, you know, they were doing, like, the thing, and he's at the psychiatrist's office, and he's, like, talking about, maybe I should go back on a mission in Africa. I was like, I didn't even know he said anything about his Mormonism, you know, sort of, you know, in the movie. So I picked up on that. I didn't pick up on that when I was younger. Yeah.
Josh, I like how you mentioned about being a little bit too old. You felt comfortable because it was Jordan as well. And one thing I liked about when I was a kid, whenever Jordan came back, I did not watch Jordan in his original run. The original three-peat, I was not a basketball fan. I became a basketball fan in 1994. So I remember hearing about it and being super excited when he said he was coming back, because I was like, I've never seen him play in person. There wasn't YouTube, so I didn't get to just look up videos of him playing. So I was extremely excited, because I was like, I'll be able to watch this guy play, who I've heard all about. And in the movie, because I still like Looney Tunes and Disney to this day. I don't think I'll ever grow out of it. But as a 13-year-old, or however old I was at the time, that is right to the point where you're almost kind of embarrassed of liking maybe Looney Tunes or liking those children's shows. And so the Michael Jordan made me feel comfortable about going to see that movie, because I was like, it was kind of a bridge to I'm old enough, because I'm watching this Michael Jordan biopic, as you said, kind of more or less, even though it's Looney Tunes. So it kind of gave me an excuse to see the Looney Tunes as well.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Raise the street cred.
Phil, you said you became an NBA fan in 94. You said that very definite. What was special about 94 that made you magically you're an NBA fan?
The Rockets won the NBA title, probably. That's my guess.
Actually, that is when I started paying attention during the finals of that year. I was just started watching basketball. I had a lot of family in Houston, so I just started watching them, and then became a Rockets fan during the finals. And then the next year, so really I started watching it during the finals of 94. It was really the full 95 season that I really started watching the full season and getting into basketball and understanding it. So then this movie came out, and it was basketball and Looney Tunes, and I was super excited about it. But yeah, I was just watching the finals, and my dad was a Rockets fan, so he and I would watch it and talk about the games.
Which, strangely enough, the Rockets played the Knicks in the finals that year, who featured Patrick Ewing.
That is true.
And the movie Space Jam, so full circle.
Brad, do you have any history with the movie at all?
I mean, I really didn't, to be honest with you guys. I didn't really get into a broad spectrum of sports fandom until probably high school. I mean, you know, grew up in Texas. My whole extended family's from around Dallas area. So, of course, you know, Cowboys, Rangers, all that, would go to Cowboys games for football, Rangers for baseball. But I don't think there was anybody in my family that really cared that much about basketball. So they never really watched it much, especially professional wise. So I never really got into it. And yeah, in high school, I started watching a little more. But when this came out, not really. But I mean, I remember watching the movie, because I think that's the beauty of it, mixing kind of here's some pro sports. And oh yeah, here's a cartoon that the whole world's familiar with. So I think that's kind of the beauty of the movie, is it drew in a bunch of audience regardless. So.
You know, unlike Rob, he said he hasn't really seen it since then. I own the movie on DVD, so I've probably seen it 50 times over the last like 5 or 6 years, because I have this weird love for Space Jam.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't think I'd watched it since high school, or maybe even since then either, because a lot of parts I forgot about.
I'm glad I could bring it back into your life, at least for the podcast.
Yes. I actually have it on Vudu, and Mason likes it a lot. So we've watched it off and on, like, you know, over the years. So it hasn't been that long for me. So
speaking of the whole height thing, did any of you guys notice that, like, after the game, when Jordan's like patting Bill Murray on the back, and he's like, hey, man, you actually got some skills. You might be able to play in the NBA after all. And he's like, I'm probably going to quote you on that, which was funny. But secondly, did you notice like the close-ups were weird? Like it made it look like Bill Murray wasn't that much shorter than him. Like when they were talking, almost like it was superimposed or Bill Murray was standing on something. Because it was just their heads.
Yeah, there's and a lot of
strength. I was like, they had to do that to stroke Bill Murray's ego because Jordan is considerably taller than him.
You don't think Bill Murray's close to 6'6"?
You don't think he's 6'3"?
No, he's definitely not.
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessarily just a stroke in ego, which although it might be because Bill Murray's got a crazy ego. The CGI work in this movie has got some really strange quirks in it, and particularly the scene where Bugs and Daffy are getting the shorts from the house, Bulldog magically appears. And the Bulldog, I don't know why they did this. I guess maybe the dog wasn't performing right or something, because you can see from the camera angle that this dog is just like superimposed and is being put on the green screen. And I don't know why they did that, but it makes the dog just look massively huge. And there's a couple other instances too, where all in all, for a 1996 movie, the special effects in this are actually pretty good and hold up fairly decent. That's actually one of the things I got as a high mark for the film in general. But yeah, there are a couple really strange gaffes in where it appears that certain objects are just like blasted huge, and the scale is very odd in some of the shots.
Yeah. Which, why would his family dog all of a sudden be able to bust through one of his doors?
The family dog tackles him out in the front yard. It's a bulldog. I've been around bulldogs. Bulldogs do not jump so high that they end up on your chest.
Especially if you're 6'6".
Yeah, I mean, that is like the freakiest bulldog of all time. These things can't even mate anymore. I mean, they got no hind legs.
All right, guys, what would you say is the best scene of the movie or your favorite scene?
All right, my favorite scene in the movie is when the Monstars come to be, when the aliens literally turn into the Monstars. And the animation in that sequence is just so good. I know that we're talking just a second ago about the CGI and special effects, but really the 2D animation is still what this movie's primarily built on. Mm-hmm. And that sequence with the lightning flashing, and you can see their inside skeleton, and it's got them transforming. There's a 360 in the two-dimensional animation is just absolutely spectacular. Along with the climatic music and the looks on Porky Pig's face and Sylvester, it's great. It really is. That is a fantastic sequence and absolutely terrifying. I could see that could terrify a kid, and great.
I agree. I liked when they sucked the town out of the players. Like Patrick Ewing couldn't even like catch the ball to shoot a free throw. Then he shoots it like whale into the crowd.
I like when Charles Barkley just wanders into the pickup game and can't play. They tell him to leave.
I kind of like the one where all the players are in the hospital together and they're running around talking about their tests they went through and consoling each other and be like, maybe there's nothing wrong with us, guys. It was just, I don't know, it was just so random, but I thought it was just kind of hilarious.
I think it's funny that they picked the tallest player in the NBA and the shortest player in the NBA, the Monstars. Like, they never really explain that logic.
Speaking of the tallest and shortest, I love the part where they're all walking in the hospital and the tall guys hit their head and Muggsy and the doctor just keep walking.
You bring up an interesting point. I mean, how did the aliens know which players to actually take? And so, it might actually make a little sense that Muggsy Bogues and Sean Bradley were picked. I mean, they didn't know.
That's true.
I mean, technically, they don't know who these players are. They just went to a Knicks game and sat next to Patricia Heaton, which was kind of a shocking moment. And
And Dan Castellaneta, right?
And Dan, yes, Homer Simpson.
Yeah, it's enjoying seeing him in there.
That was great.
I know Rob probably enjoyed that. I didn't realize that was Homer Simpson. Yeah.
It's like, hey, it's Homer.
Yeah, it's Homer. Yeah.
I had two scenes because, I like to have more than one thing just in case. But I got to say, Bud kind of mentioned it earlier with Michael Jordan's arm extending. He's got all the players on him to win the game. That part's kind of cool. I always like that. But my favorite part is probably like the intro, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, but you got like the music and then they got the flashing around and it's like Michael Jordan, you know, and all this. I always thought that was so cool. Like, you know, I thought like even now, you know, sometimes teams will do that for like their intro video or something. They'll do some version of that just with their players now and things. And,
Josh, you say that's cheesy, but under best scene, I wrote, and I quote, montage to the Space Jam song.
I said cheesy just in case y'all laughed at me, but
that was my favorite like as well growing up, especially growing up because of the highlights. Because like I said, YouTube wasn't around. So like if I wanted to watch some of Jordan's highlights, you know, put on Space Jam and at least watch the first 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. And it's got all these sweet plays by Jordan and stuff.
I mean, now I can see those plays anytime I want. So now it's not quite the same, but especially like in the mid to late 90s, that was awesome. Just seeing all those highlights in a row like that.
Yeah, you already had to buy or rent a videotape of Jordan's highlights to watch highlights back then.
Michelle hated that intro. And sitting next to her during Space Jam, she just like halfway through the intro, the montage, she like turns to me and goes, "Why is this so unnecessarily long?"
Well, then I definitely hope she listens to this part of the podcast so she can be like,
it was fantastic.
I probably just stole some of her thunder for, you know, her own segment.
It was like SportsCenter on steroids, man. It was so cool. So.
What old 90s song. What's a cringe scene from this movie?
My cringe scene is the whole Newman, anything that involved Newman. I felt like he was such a spare character.
I love how you're referencing him
for comic relief, but they didn't really need him because the Looney Tunes kind of provided that on their own.
Yeah.
Just the whole Wayne Knight being in that movie, just I really felt was pretty unnecessary.
I wrote Wayne Knight being Jordan's lapdog. So kind of the same.
Yeah. And it was all like fat jokes. Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. He was all fat jokes and like, you know, just tired like stuff. So.
And he was a strange choice for that movie too. I mean, because at that point he had been in Seinfeld, right?
Mm-hmm.
But which he's not even a main character in that. Then he was in Jurassic Park, which I wouldn't call him a main character in Jurassic Park. But
Jurassic
kind
Park
of an important
before
movie.
What year was Jurassic
Dennis
Park?
Dennis Nedry, man.
Wasn't that like 90?
Screwed everything up.
Or, was Jurassic Park 92 or 93? It was before Space Jam.
It was 93.
Really, other than. I actually had totally forgot he was in this movie until I saw the opening credits and saw his name. So, I mean, that's how very non-memorable he was, I guess, for me. So, that would be mine.
Well, even Larry Bird himself knew he was pathetic, as he said so on the golf course.
Way to be, Larry.
Larry's always sniping dudes, man, in all these movies.
It seems to be his only M.O., In both these movies, he has to call someone pathetic.
And the way he does it is just like levels, you know, it just has this way. I can tell why he was such a great trash talker, because he could just straight face, like, lay you out, man.
By the way, speaking of which, I do think it's funny / slightly concerning how little Bill Murray and Larry Bird cared that Michael Jordan all of a sudden was gone after he hits a hole in one, reaches down to get his ball, and then he just disappears. They're like, well, I'm sure he's fine. He just wanted to get away from that.
Yeah, they're
Wayne Knight guy. He's
pathetic. That family guy.
Yeah, they're like,
nobody wants him run off or anything. Like,
they're like, Michael's probably fine. Let's go get a beer.
I'm
sorry. I'd be calling like 911 as soon as that happened. You got to do something, just
especially because it's Michael Jordan. It's not just like some random asshole. You know what I mean?
Speaking of, that would also lead off SportsCenter. Michael Jordan went through a golf.
Hits a hole in one, and then is literally sucked into the hole.
And meanwhile, no authorities, no police are out looking for him.
I mean, say what you want about Wayne
Nobody Knight. Nobody cares, apparently.
What you want about Wayne Knight's character, about Stan. And he had his reasons for wanting Jordan to come back, but he seemed to be the only one that actually cared that Jordan was gone.
Which is weird, right?
He tried to dig up that hole. And
well,
tried
technically,
to find
Bill Murray cared because somehow he magically appeared.
That's because he's friends with the producer.
Yes, Ian Reitman put him there.
Which was Reitman.
I appreciate Looney Tunes addressing that whole plot hole, and then they just didn't care. They went with it anyways.
And it's Looney Tunes. You don't need to make sense with the plot holes.
They'll just throw an anvil on somebody's head, and you're on to the next scene. So.
Hey, come on, guys. I mean, cringe scene for me. To be completely fair, this movie's a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess. It's the plot is so bizarre, even for a Looney Tunes based movie. The plot is just weird. You've got what is kind of like this weird Trump-like alien character who wants to enslave the Looney Tunes. And then later, Michael Jordan. And it's just, it's very strange, man. The B, or I guess maybe even you could consider this a C plot with the talentless NBA stars. I did not remember how much screen time that plot gets.
That was some of my favorite scenes. About a third of
the movie. Just Charles Barkley and Sean Bradley and co. just like wandering around saying, we got no skills. It's very weird. And their acting is awful.
It's really
bad. How did Charles Barkley end up with an actual career after basketball on camera? Based on that, you would think he would be, the guy sitting on a couch.
If you want to really find out, you can go back to HBO Max, where you probably watch Space Jam, and watch the Inside the NBA 4-part documentary.
I might do that. But really, I mean, it just felt like those scenes had very little payoff for, laughs or even any real interest outside of a couple bad jokes. They knock their heads because they're tall. I could go on.
I think they could have done better with the tie-in to Jordan Rides the Bus. I mean, it was right there, but
yeah. Also, why is Foghorn Leghorn singing Dixie? I understand that, is the Southern charm of Foghorn Leghorn. I am very familiar with Foghorn Leghorn, but seriously, this is a movie that's somehow supposed to be about avoiding slavery, and this guy's singing literally the slaver's national anthem while dribbling down the basketball court.
One thing I thought was interesting was, like, the head of the Monstars was Danny DeVito's voice, which actually I didn't pick up on at first, but I like how that once Jordan offered the option of adding himself to the whole slavery train, that he was all for it. And he was like, yeah, you're going to sign autographs all day long and whatever. Well, he didn't even know who Michael Jordan was when the game first started. And now all of a sudden he's going to be a huge attraction signing autographs for all these aliens. It's like that probably don't even know who he is. Like
who's this guy? He's a baseball player.
Yeah, there's some plot holes in Space Jam.
Don't ruin the best sports movie ever made.
You can't
take a movie too seriously where they literally ball Michael Jordan up into a basketball, dribble him around.
Or where his arm stretches across the court.
Yeah.
I did find it interesting that Jordan was okay with him putting a baseball strikeout in the uptick of the movie.
Yeah, he seemed like he was a pretty good sport about the whole thing. Like he let him make a ball joke about him and stamp his head okay.
That's one thing that when Courtney and I were watching it, that's one thing we talked about was we were impressed that he actually had the I'm bad at baseball jokes in there.
Exactly. He was, he had the power of them because of where he was in his career. He could have easily told him that's not going in the movie. But I just found it interesting that it was in there.
Especially because of how notorious of a competitor he was. But it wouldn't have been a very fun movie if he wasn't a good sport about it.
So. What scene from this movie motivated you?
Michael Jordan's secret stuff, man. The Bugs Bunny dude, it was just great. He picked the right time to come in, to galvanize the troops, and he got them going, man. He got them playing. He got them seeing in themselves what they didn't see in themselves at that time, being down by 100 points or whatever.
Yes, but is that not the same point where it's like, hey, kids, if somebody hands you something mysterious in the locker room to drink, just go ahead and pound it back. Yeah, life's going to be fine.
How quickly the rest of the Looney Tunes were ready to take PEDs. How ready they were like, I need a performance-enhancing drink.
I think the moral...
It was the 90s.
The moral of the story is, if Bugs Bunny gives it to you or takes something from your house or whatever, it's cool because it's Bugs Bunny. You know,
if somebody looks like a cartoon character and they tell you to ingest something, just go ahead.
Just rock do it. Out with it.
You know, in hindsight, it's actually unfortunate that Wayne Knight was not replaced with Jose Canseco.
Or Mark McGuire.
Oh no, Mark McGuire never squealed.
Of course, you could argue that.
Or that cartoon camel for the camel cigarettes, you know.
You could argue that they were just, I mean, the Monstars were clearly performance enhancing themselves by stealing the talent of NBA players.
True.
So.
True.
You could argue they were just trying to match their competition.
But dude, two wrongs make a right. That's the question we need to discuss.
Hey, man, that's why the Houston Astros were banging on trash cans and wore buzzers against the Yankees. It just leveled the field.
So, yeah, because it's almost like when he's like, guys, it's just water. They almost look disappointed. Like, I thought I was taking something good.
I personally felt very motivated when, you know, Michael Jordan goes and finds the talentless NBA stars and Newman is still with him. It made me feel comforted to know that a total stiff like Newman could become friends with Michael Jordan as long as he traveled to Looney Tune land and helped him save the Toons from becoming slaves. That's motivation.
Well, get your friend like Newman. He won't leave your side.
That's
right. I love how we're still referencing him as Newman.
He's Newman. What are we going to do? Call him the guy from Third Rock from the Sun? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it definitely makes Jerry Seinfeld look like a jerk if Michael Jordan could put up with him, but Seinfeld can't.
The guy who by a bunch of little dinosaurs in Jurassic Park.
Doesn't he get eaten in Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm saying. All those little dinosaurs are in his Jeep when he gets back in it, and they like just annihilate him. It's a little off from what we were talking about, but we're talking about the whole performance-enhancing water. There were a lot of things in this movie that did not age well. There's a lot of things in this movie that was released today that people would be, like, marching outside the freaking theaters.
You mean you've done a Google search on Space Jam recently?
No, it's like, okay, there is a moment in there where Yosemite Sam is literally pointing his pistol at one of the basketball players in the middle of the basketball court. I mean, you release that today, you're going to have a march on City Hall, for crying out.
I don't know. I mean, I saw the trailer for Space Jam 2, and they got Yosemite Sam shooting at Daffy Duck in the trailer. I was shocked when I saw that in the Space Jam 2 trailer because I figured they would, you know, put like a walkie-talkie in his hand or
especially
something.
Especially how much they've kind of edited back Space Jam 2 already with trying to be politically correct about it, and then stuff like that stays in. It's just interesting. But like, yeah, when I saw Yosemite Sam on the basketball court with his pistol shooting at people, and it's like, that's not okay, is it?
Pepe Le Pew had a much smaller role in that movie than I remembered him having. He was really only in like one small scene.
He's barely in the movie.
Yeah, Brad's right on this. I mean, I already brought up the fact that, you know, you got Foghorn Leghorn singing Dixie for God's sakes in the movie. But yeah, it's pretty obvious when your wife turns to you and goes, why is she a stripper? You know, in reference to Lola Bunny. I've only got to assume this is what created the whole furry community, you know.
It's Lola Bunny. Originated. It all comes back to Lola.
Right.
Why is the bunny a total smoke show? It is weird.
The only redeeming quality on her character is she kept getting pissed off whenever people would make their, what was it that she got ticked off?
Doll.
Yeah. And so at least that's, you know, she's defending herself on that was the only redeeming thing there. But it wouldn't have been that way if, like you said, they didn't present her as the basketball playing stripper bunny rabbit.
Look, she would obviously be queen of the trailer park. She's probably an Oklahoma Sooner fan.
Smoking a pack of menthols every day.
Well, it also goes back with Lola Bunny about naming her Lola.
Hey,
I mean,
I had a dog named Lola.
The
you
name
take
Lola,
back whatever you're going to say.
The name Lola can go back from a saying, whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. Which also goes back to Lola Montez, who was a Spanish dancer a long time ago. and a mistress and all that stuff. So really just naming her Lola kind of brings the quote unquote stripper vibes. So that's what they were going for.
It was good eye candy for bugs, okay? So
sure made him go stiff.
I loved that. See, okay.
Gave him proper motivation to come through in the clutch.
Did anybody else think jokes? Anybody else think that Taz should have been able to do some more stuff with his like 90 mile per hour whirlwind? I don't know. Taz always seemed like a crazy little bastard, and he just really didn't do that much.
All he did was like bite the basketballs and stuff. Yeah, it seems like he could have like done a lot
get
more.
Get the basketball and do your thing until
you think about the destruction Taz always did. Yeah. I mean, get after it, homeboy. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, I completely agree on Taz. But also, what's Gossamer doing? Gossamer is a freaking what? How tall is that guy supposed to be? He's like an 8 foot tall monster. And he's not able to play against monsters? Come on.
Yeah, I know. He ought to be like working the low block against Sean Bradley, you know?
You would think so.
Muscling him around. I don't know.
Everyone else in the league did.
I think it's time we listen to what the wives feel about Space Jam. How does that sound?
Brilliant. Sounds great.
Killer.
Welcome to the wives segment. I am here with Erica, Michelle, and Jessica. And Courtney, thank you so much for joining me today. I want to know, what is your history with the movie Space Jam? And if you hadn't seen this movie before, was this a movie that you were interested in watching?
Oh, I'd seen it like a million times. I don't even know how many times I've seen that movie. I was somewhat about it, but it actually was better than I thought it was going to be. It actually made me laugh quite a few times. So there you go.
I think I saw it for the first time around middle school, somewhere in there. But I don't specifically remember the first time I saw it. I was trying to remember, but I don't have any memory of that. I've always liked it. And I thought it was funny. And I liked how they kind of combined the cartoon with real life. I think that was really innovative for 1996. When I was really into the NBA, Josh wanted me to add that. He thinks that's funny. But I used to watch the NBA with my dad a lot around that time in my life. And I would like collect the NBA basketball cards.
Really?
Wow. So
funny. Special thing. That's cool. Yeah.
I don't think it had lasted too long in my life. It was probably that short period of time. So it was kind of interesting to me to watch this movie.
I've never seen it before. And probably unpopular opinion, but I always thought it kind of looked dumb when I was a kid. I never wanted to see it. I love the Looney Tunes, but I think I was like 13 when it came out. And I was like, I don't want to see the Looney Tunes with like regular people. I just want the Looney Tunes.
That makes sense.
I saw it one time when I was a kid. I was going to say elementary school, but now that I know when it came out, I don't think that's accurate. But I saw it once and I thought it was stupid and I never watched it again. And every time Philip brings it up and I roll my eyes, which is often, you'd think he doesn't bring it up that often, but he does.
It is legitimately in my top five sports movies list.
I am not surprised at all. No surprise.
What was your favorite part of the movie, and what part of the movie did you think was dumb or shouldn't have happened? So what was your favorite part and what was your least favorite part?
I think my favorite was the Michael Jordan story, like the storyline. Well, I guess it was truth, reality, how he went from playing in the NBA to baseball for that time. That was kind of a weird time and unexpected. I like that story of his real life, that part. And I think maybe his family was in there too, is what Josh said.
Yeah, I was wrong. Okay, I got called out.
Oh, he got called out for that. Okay, well, we were watching and he told me that was his real children. Those were his real children. So I was like, Mom, that's so cute.
We give him a hard time during the rest of the podcast, so you can listen for that part of the podcast.
And he had me believing it too. So, okay, he didn't correct me. So there we go. So that was my favorite.
I liked that Michael Jordan was okay with being poked fun at for his baseball career. From what I know about him now, what was that documentary that everyone was watching about him?
The Last Dance.
The Last Dance. Now that I know that he's like super competitive and all that, like it's really interesting to me that he was totally cool with this movie that kind of made fun of him for not being good at baseball.
The beginning of it. So it was very new when they made the movie at that time about him going in, right?
Was it the beginning of him being in baseball?
No, it was filmed after he'd already come back to play basketball. So it was right after he came back to play partially for that one season, and then they filmed it after that. And then the next year is the year after he filmed it is the year they won the championship. So it was during
the Washington Wizards.
Now that was when he did with the Bulls, because he came with the Bulls, then won 3 years, and then went to the Wizards in like 99.
Oh, okay. That was later.
Okay, gotcha.
So was he like hard up for money at that time? Is that why he did that?
I can't imagine any scenario where Michael Jordan was hard up for money in the 90s.
Man, why would he do this movie if he wasn't
hard up for money?
Yeah.
Because he saw the script and saw that it was genius, and he knew that he had to be a part of the cinematic master.
Michael freaking Jordan, he did not have to do that.
But you have to think it was really new and fresh and kind of a different idea at that time. Really okay, was. And I will tell you guys, it's funny to hear you guys say this because I'm like the biggest critic of cartoonish stuff. Like I do not normally like cartoon stuff at all. Josh will tell you that. Like I'm not a big cartoon person. And I thought it was so cool. Like it really, like, so it's kind of funny to hear you talk about it like that. Like I still, like when we watched it, not, you know, a couple days ago, thought it was neat. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm more into the Disney stuff.
I mean, some of it was silly, of course. As an adult watching it, it's kind of like, okay.
I think we.
Mine was when he went into when he was golfing and he went into the hole, obviously, to disappear. And then that guy that his whatever he was to him, his produce, whatever, coordinated all the stuff for him, was digging the big hole. That was my favorite part. Because it was like bringing reality to a cartoonish movie. It was like, no, we really got to think about real life here. Like this dude disappeared. What are we going to do about this? But that's the marketing person in me. So it's kind of like, okay, so we had this going and what are we going to do with it?
You're in like crisis control. Like where did he go?
Yes. And the most dramatic shouldn't have happened part, but it wouldn't have made the movie go together, was I didn't like how the little guys shrank. And when they got big, like, it was just so much to me. Like they could have not been so creepy looking when they got so large.
I do agree with that, Jessica. I do agree. That part kind of threw me a little bit. Yeah.
I liked when the aliens stole the basketball players' talents and the basketball players just looked really dumb. Yes. Like
that was
the basketballs hitting them in the face and like banging into things.
If you had to play a group of aliens in a game, and if you lose, you have to go with them. What game would you feel confident that there is no way you would lose? Or activity? It doesn't have to be a game. Or what activity would you do better than the aliens?
I would say lip syncing to all of the Backstreet Boys old hits.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I love you.
I would never lose that.
Never. I want to see this. Can we do this?
Yeah. Let's make it happen.
Is there a game where you can identify actors and what other shows they've been in? Because I'm really good at that. Like I can see someone in one show and be like, oh, they were also in this episode of this show at this time. I would win that game for sure.
Hey, that's awesome because I never know those people.
You just have to Google it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Other than like a board game, maybe? Shopping?
Shopping.
Finding the best deals.
I'd have to say singing because I don't really do a whole lot else. Singing or car related items. It would have to be one of the two. Singing could be like sight reading or something like that because I used to have to do that for honor choirs and stuff. So I could beat them in that.
Would you recommend this movie to someone else? And out of 23 bottles of Michael Jordan's secret stuff, what would you give this movie? So out of 23 bottles, what would you rate this movie?
I said 20. Out of 23.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, I do like it. And I would recommend it. Yes, I would. And I'm really excited to see the new one.
As am I. So I'm with you on that.
When's the new one coming out?
July.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm only going to give it about 10 because it was not my favorite. But I watched it, so.
I got through it.
Yes.
I'd say 5, and that's only because I like the Looney Tunes.
I'm going to go with 5 as well, because if I go below that, I feel like I'm going to get divorced.
I am so
sad. I don't like it. Stop looking at me like that.
This is really sad.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only female that was not so hyped about it.
So far, Erica is my favorite out of all of you right now.
Yes,
so apparently. Thank you, Erica.
I mean, I gave you children, but whatever.
Oh, man.
I figure you at least give it a 10, but okay, 5 I guess will do. Thank you so much for joining us for this segment, and we will continue the rest of the show. Thanks. Thank you very much, ladies. That was an excellent discussion about your thoughts on Space Jam. What would you say in this movie? Who's the best character?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is Jordan, but I'm trying to think of another
one. Mine was Bill Murray. I enjoyed Bill Murray's scenes.
I got Larry Bird.
Larry Bird. I was about to say, if I had to go off the beaten path, I'd say Larry Bird, just for comic relief purposes.
You guys have already hit on the point that he just doesn't seem to give a flip that Michael Jordan gets sucked down a golf ball. It's like, you're just probably trying to get away from Newman. And this is somehow the second movie that we have now reviewed. And we've only been going on this for what, since January? And somehow two movies that we reviewed have Larry Bird in it. How many movies has Larry Bird been in? It can't be that many.
Only a few. I'm kind of going forward with this, but that's why Larry Bird was my surprise performance, because he was quite the prolific actor in 1996, because he was in Space Jam and Celtic Pride. You know, that was a good year for him.
I looked up his IMDb page a few days ago, and he wasn't even credited as an actor in Celtic Pride, but he's actually credited as an actor in this one. And so I guess my only assumption on this is that Larry took notes on his underwhelming performance in Celtic Pride, and he really stepped it up for this role, which, you know, is obviously the role that he was born to play, baby.
Rob, I'm really enjoying you being proper and saying Celtic Pride.
Celtic Pride.
You're being very proper with the way you're saying words.
No, I'm out of
no lazy Celtic.
Those Boston Celtics.
Plus, didn't I think Blue Chips was around that time, and didn't Larry Bird have like a brief like cameo on Blue Chips whenever they went out to French Lick, Indiana to scout some kid that was supposed to be him?
Pretty sure he was.
Yeah, that was Ricky. Wasn't that the name of the kid that was supposed to
Ricky,
be?
Ricky, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was trying to remember.
I think he was like very briefly, like, you know.
He's there. It's Ricky Rowe.
Ricky Rowe.
Yeah.
Man, I love Blue Chips. We need to review that sometime.
I love that movie too. Love it.
That'll be a good one to do.
Who is the non-obvious villain in Space Jam? I'll go ahead and start with this one because I know who the villain is in Space Jam. The villain in this movie is actually the kid at the beginning that says, "Let's get out of here, Dad. This stinks. Don't bring me here anymore, all right?" That kid is the villain in the movie because that's what Danny DeVito, I don't remember his character's name, Danny DeVito sees and is like, we need to get the Looney Tunes. So that kid is my villain. What do you guys think?
He was the first domino to fall. Yeah, that's right. As soon as he was unsatisfied, you know, then, you know, Danny DeVito goes
apparently
on
that
the
one. Apparently that one kid just has a lot of say in what's going on.
Don't bring me any more rate.
Who do you guys think?
I think it's actually Jim Rome.
Yeah.
Because if you Jim Rome,
yeah. Pre-goatee Jim Rome.
Yeah, after Jordan struggles in that baseball game, his kids are watching Jim Rome talk about how much he sucks. Oh. And then the Looney Tunes suck him down the golf hole, right? And then would he have been as willing to stay if he was having success at baseball? I don't know. So maybe Jim Rome really hit home with his criticism. And so Jordan's like, you know what? I'm sucking at baseball anyways. I might as well help these tunes out.
It's hard because he was the villain for Michael Jordan. However, he wasn't the villain for the Looney Tunes because they would still have to play basketball. So, but he was the villain for Michael Jordan. So, yeah.
My villain was the entire Barons baseball team because they were just enabling Jordan to not reach his full potential as an athlete by continuing to encourage him languishing in the minor leagues of baseball. You know, just like, hey, man, you know, when you strike out, it looks good. But when I stroke out, man, it looks nasty, man. It's gross. And then you got the catcher on the other team. Thanks for signing my basketball, not my baseball, my basketball. I'll tell you what pitches are coming and you still can't hit them. You know, it was like kind of a closet flex. I was trying to help you out, man, but I knew you wouldn't hit it anyway. So too bad. No, not really. I don't think that's really what he was going for, but I do think that they were enablers. And I think that if Michael Jordan would have just allowed himself to just be a people pleaser and stick around, he would have never come back. He would have never become as great as he was. He wouldn't have won those extra championships. He wouldn't have saved the world from the Monstars. And, you know, the Looney Tunes would just be telling the same tired jokes night after night for eternity.
I got Michael Jordan's dog. That thing is a complete and total menace, and he's a danger to his clothing and also to his bodily health. Could you imagine Michael Jordan coming home and being tackled by his freakish bulldog that somehow has like about a 4-foot leap, and he falls back and then breaks his wrist, and then he's out for a couple weeks because his bulldog got it? That dog's crazy as hell. He needs to get rid of that thing.
Where's Michael Vick when you need him? Put that dog in the ring.
That dog would have been a sacrificial lamb in Michael Vick's dog fighting ring.
I don't know. That dog could jump like that. Dog might actually have a fighting chance against one or two of them.
We kind of hit on it before. Could it not be said that, as far as villains towards Michael Jordan, could it not be said that literally everyone who seemingly didn't care that Jordan was missing, that's kind of sideways villainous in and of itself. Like, he just disappeared. Nobody gave a crap, like we hit on before.
It could be just kind of a microcosm of the whole NBA, too, when Michael Jordan took off.
It's like,
where'd he go? I don't care. Oh, look, the Rockets.
That's my shot.
I live in Houston. For Houston to win a championship in anything, it's got to be some kind of weird bullshit going on.
There was. It was called trash cans.
Or just the fact that Wayne Knight was so annoying that Michael Jordan, it was just believable that he would disappear just to get away from him.
But with everybody so pathetic. Nonchalant about Jordan just disappearing down, it's like, does that happen all the time? I mean,
another guy disappeared
down the 18th hole. Well, that sucks. See you guys later.
He was
like, he's like, gambling. Hey, I need to run to the bathroom, guys. I'll be right back. And like, doesn't show back up. I mean, he like disappears down the golf hole. Like,
well,
yeah, that's a slid out of here.
They're sitting at the clubhouse having a beer afterwards, going, anything? So, how was your guys around? Oh, Jordan disappeared again.
So it's this golf course in Alabama that they're playing, because they show him at a Barons game. He goes home, the dog mauls him. And so is he playing golf in Alabama? And then Bill Murray, that means Bill Murray, he don't live in Alabama. Larry Bird don't live in Alabama. So they came down to play golf with Michael Jordan. He gets sucked down a golf hole, and then they just take off. Where are they going? Back to the hotel? Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, they never really explained why Larry Bird and Bill Murray were in Alabama.
They took off and went to the strip club, Rob. That's where they went.
It's some final season of Game of Thrones kind of, you know, moving around, you know, ridiculousness.
So, Rob, are you trying to hunt down?
She's always been evil.
Rob's trying to hunt down.
I'm going to show you this montage of clips to remind you about how she was evil this whole time.
Rob's trying to hunt down the pathway to the Looney Tunes land.
I would love to go to Looney Tunes land.
Can I go to Alabama?
They would never take
I'm not going to Alabama. Not happening.
That should be a good question we could discuss. Would you guys live in Looney Tunes land if you were given the choice?
Is Lola there? Just kidding.
is this 1996 Lola? Or is this, you know, like 2021? Yeah, Lola.
Hey, rabbits are known for their promiscuity as well.
Oh, my gosh. Now, is Looney Tunes land like how it is in this movie, where you have to go through a golf hole, or is it going to be like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where there's like a tunnel you can drive through and then just visit and you can drive back?
Apparently, Don Cheadle knows how to get to Looney Tunes land, so, you know, go ask him.
Well, and so does Bill Murray. He just appeared there, so apparently Bill Murray figured it out.
They missed a great opportunity with Space Jam 2. They should have had Bill Murray in place of Don Cheadle. And it's been Bill Murray pulling the strings for Looney Tunes land and Space Jam this whole damn time.
Hey, you don't know that Bill Murray's not actually the villain of the new movie. You know, you never know.
Or was he the villain here. Of? Was he the villain of the first movie?
Larry Bird. Make Larry Bird the villain. That'd be the second time he's been the villain, because I remember saying in Celtic Pride he was the villain in that movie.
See, what I'd be worried about is, do they have booze in Looney Tune Land?
The best booze.
Good question.
And they're all
Yosemite Sam's at the saloon all the time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
right. It just comes in a bottle with three X's on it.
So it's just moonshine.
Is a Rhodes Scholar. He has a PhD in English Lit.
But he doesn't
sound like this.
You know, Foghorn Leghorn partake.
But he, Porky Pig may be smart, but he's still not smart enough to own a pair of pants. I mean,
he's a cartoon pig. They don't need pants. Winnie the Pooh had no pants. No one ever complained about him, and he played with Christopher Robin.
Here's the thing. If you made it to the level of famous as some of these guys, would one of your things be, you know what, I'm this famous, I'm never going to wear pants again?
Am I in Looney Tunes?
Speaking of the no pants thing, George didn't have pants either. And his name was literally Curious George.
He's a monkey.
They let a monkey with no pants named Curious George.
I mean, I've never seen a monkey with pants.
I mean, I just think that's interesting.
What was he curious about?
Exactly.
Why the man with the yellow hat never had a name? I would be curious too.
He's curious what his name was.
Okay, I'm going to get this train back on track. And And if you were the director of 1996 Space Jam, and you had to pick the different athletes that became the Monstars, and who would your first five athletes be, or not necessarily five, who would be on the top of your list to pick to be in the movie?
NBA players, right?
NBA players, yeah.
Really, I kept Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing. I think that was an absolute natural for at the time, but I want to definitely replace Larry Johnson, Sean Bradley, and Muggsy. You know, with I would say Reggie Miller, David Robinson, and Little Penny.
Little Penny.
Because they're aliens. They don't know what a basketball player is. I want them to take Little Penny.
Wasn't because Karl Malone was still playing then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
So
yeah,
Karl Malone would be a good choice.
Yeah, I picked I picked Alonzo Mourning. I think
yes, that's what I was going to say.
I thought Gary Payton taking the place of Muggsy, to have a point guard take the place of a point guard.
And I would say John Stockton as the point guard.
I was going to say Malone, Shaq. Barkley was Shaq. A good fit.
Barkley's a good fit, I think.
Well, okay, but the obvious, Alien, Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, but Rodman hadn't really reached his peak weirdness at that point yet.
Two on the nose.
I don't know. I watched Antonio.
He was pretty weird with San Antonio.
He had just started developing that.
Yeah.
He was pretty vanilla on the Pistons.
A couple years.
That's true. He hadn't quite reached his alien level yet, his Kim Jong-un's best friend level yet.
Well, when was the
man's lived a hell of a life.
Well, when was the wedding dress? When was that?
Like when he married himself,
when he was playing for the Bulls.
When he married himself, when he married Carmen Electra.
Well, Daly kind of really kept him in line with the Pistons, and once he was gone, then you know that's when Rodman kind of went downhill. You know,
but you know everybody
personality wise,
all his crazy antics. But man, you look at his stats and everything. Dude was a hell of a player. Right.
Oh yeah, he's Hall of Fame.
But, check out our 30 for 30 podcast about that. We can talk.
Tied it together.
Lead in. Look at us.
Leading them in. Come on.
And he's got some Oklahoma ties. Hey, come on. Yeah.
Check out the Sports Flicks Cinematic Universe podcast universe.
Speaking of Oklahoma ties, no Mark Price on the Monstar.
Yeah. Mark
the Enid boy.
Yep, that's right. Dad's name is still on the YMCA there, the Denny Price YMCA.
We have discussed this a few times already. I know some of us have very strong opinions about the LeBron James Space Jam A New Legacy. What are your thoughts about it? Because I am actually looking forward to it because I enjoy space. I enjoy Looney Tunes. I root against LeBron James in basketball as much as possible. he's actually a much better actor than Michael Jordan in the things I've seen, and I think he'll do a much better job acting wise than Jordan.
He's a great actor. You've seen him every time he's
on. I
was waiting for it. I knew somebody was going to say.
But yeah, so what are your thoughts? Are you going to watch it? Are you going to hate watch it? Are you going to come in with an open mind? Or are you going to just show up and curse every time you see LeBron James on the screen? What are your thoughts?
I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it. But I honestly, and Phil, I still love you, but this is 100% an obvious cash grab and nothing more.
Amen.
That and inflating LeBron's ego. That's the only purpose of this movie. And now let's kick it to Rob Hyder.
It is a cash grab. It's a horrendous cash grab by Warner Brothers. Right, look at the trailer, for God's sakes. When they go into the
basketball, the trailer looks awesome. No.
Warner Brothers, no. United Artists, every single studio that they have somehow bought out from Time Warner for Turner.
Rob, no, you arena, get, no, Rob, Rob, no.
Clockwork Orange? What is going on with this? Clockwork Orange and Space Jam?
That's what makes it look so awesome, though.
You do not need Alex and the Droogs in Space Jam.
I watched the trailer 5 times. I love the fact that they're bringing all these different characters in.
Hey,
I think that's what makes it look so good.
They're trying to advertise everything, so you go and you buy your HBO Max, which I do say I do have HBO Max. And if they want to sponsor the Sports Flicks Just Give Us Clicks podcast, we'd be A-OK with. But that is an obvious cash grab to say, hey, look at all the shit we have on HBO Max. Thank you, LeBron James, for being a massive billboard.
No, it is a cash grab, but it looks really good.
Phil, in all fairness, you can't interrupt and jump in on Rob. You asked. You knew. That's like smacking yourself in the face and being mad when it hurts.
When Rob's wrong, I need to speak up. So
basically, you're always ranting. Look, I obviously this is not a movie I'm going to seek out. LeBron James just annoys the absolute thunder out of me. I really does. He just seems to me to be one of these individuals who just has to be loved in some kind of capacity. Mm-hmm. And since he isn't loved, he's going to buy it in whatever way he can. And I don't know. I mean, I don't like him. There's just something about him that just rubs me the wrong way. I think Seth Curry would have been a much better an NBA player to actually have in this role. You got Aisha there. You got the kids. He's much more of a family type oriented individual. It would make a lot more sense. That's just my 2 cents on it. Aside from that, I mean, I have seen the trailer. The storyline looks better than the actual Space Jam. As far as like a plot, they don't hide much in the plot of Space Jam 2, which I guess is good. And the animation looks decent, but the Toon Squad jerseys, come on. It looks ridiculous. Yeah. He looks ridiculous. It looks like a rainbow threw up on him.
Well, and for me, it's hard to go from the 2D to more 3D. Like, and whenever LeBron becomes animated, I don't know if I was a fan of that in that aspect of the trailer when LeBron is a cartoon.
I do want to clarify, Rob keeps saying Seth Curry. Is he referring to the guard for the 76ers or Steph Curry, the guard for the Warriors?
He was in a rant mode, bud. Give him a little leeway.
He said Seth Curry earlier, too. So
hey, Mike Gundy can say the downgrades.
Daniel Stern. You know, we're talking about the mid-90s here.
Who actually was the actor in Celtic Pride, right? So
that's right. That's what it was. Yeah. So,
you know who I'm talking about.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, I will probably watch it through the lens of, you know, it would have to be an amazing movie for me for it to supplant the original Space Jam in my mind. Like, I'm going into it thinking it's going to be worse. So, I'm prejudiced against it, but I am hoping it won't suck, but no, go ahead.
I mean, I will say I'm not going to end up liking it better than Space Jam, the first one. Because the first one is the nostalgia. Like, it brings all back all of 90s nostalgia.
Well, you think about the concept of it, of the first one. And now we're just copying off the concept to go make another movie.
I mean, yeah, so far,
very fresh so far, for its time.
So far, this Space Jam has already done a horrible disservice that I'm not a fan of, because for years, the Space Jam website stayed the same from the 1996 Space Jam website, and now it's changed to Space Jam A New Legacy, and that makes me sad.
Should have kind of thrown my hat in the ring on LeBron here. You know, I'm not really a big fan of LeBron either, okay? And what's funny when it comes to LeBron, he's the kind of player that I think in most scenarios I would kind of like, you know, like he's, for all intents and purposes, he seems like he's a good family man, you know? He married his high school sweetheart. There's no big scandals or anything. He's not, you know, getting in trouble all the time off the court or anything like that. He seems like he just comes, does his job very well, and he's become a big time player. But for just some of the other things, like he just has, it's his attitude. He seems like he, you know, and I guess I don't know maybe a great way to put it, but whereas you had Michael Jordan, who was just like, I'm going to play my way and you're going to beat me playing my way, but my way will be so good that you can't stop me. I feel like LeBron chases trends. Like he's the guy who's going to be like, okay, the league is flopping now, I'm going to flop. The league is shooting threes now, okay, I'm going to shoot threes. The league is moving around, okay, I'm not sticking around here at this team. I'm going to move and make my super team too. I don't think people like Jordan, who could strike fear in opponents, whether they would admit it or not, he wouldn't have moved. He wouldn't have chased the trends. If flopping was a big thing in the 90s, I don't think Michael Jordan would have been flopping. You know, he's just like, he's like the lowest common denominator that you can be when it comes to a superstar, in my opinion. So I don't know.
So Josh, would you say you're saying that the rest of the NBA kind of came to him versus him coming to the rest of the NBA?
He didn't change the NBA. Now, Steph Curry, however we want to say it, even though he maybe isn't as good of a player as LeBron James, he did change the NBA. His three-point shooting changed the way people play in the NBA now. LeBron just kind of – he just follows the trends, and he does the trends better than a lot of other people, but he's not transformative.
Think about LeBron James just for a second. So LeBron James has – what is it now? He's got four – is it four NBA titles?
Yes, he has four.
I think so, yeah.
He's got four. Who's he beaten on all this? I start going through the great names of this generation, of this era. He's 1-2 against Tim Duncan. He's 1-3 against Steph Curry. He's 1-2 against Kevin Durant. Start going down the list. Yet we're all supposed to sit here and go, oh, LeBron James is the king. It's very strange to me. I'm not going to take it away from him and say, hey, you know what? It is a hell of an accomplishment. He's been in every NBA finals for like a decade, you know, except for the one where random Toronto won. It's very odd to me that it's just kind of handed to him. And he played in the East. There was no competition over there.
Right.
It's very strange.
I think both Josh and Rob kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, LeBron is not his own man like Michael Jordan was. He desperately wants to be liked. And he's more like Magic Johnson than he is Michael Jordan, honestly. And I think the first Space Jam, this is kind of a low-key moment in the film, but it stood out to me because it just demonstrated Jordan's mindset. Like, when there was 10 seconds left and they were down by one, you know, he was like, huddle up. He's like, okay, one of y'all needs to steal the ball, get it to me, and I'll score before the time runs out. It's like he didn't even waver. Like, he just knew that's what was going to happen, which was just like typical Michael Jordan. See, LeBron would be like, okay, well, I'll make the right pass. Like, I would not be 100% shocked at all if Space Jam 2 ended with LeBron dishing it to Bugs for the layup. But with Jordan, it's like, just get me the ball, I'll score before the time runs out, and we'll win it. Like, he just said it, complete confidence. Like, that's not LeBron, that's Jordan. And it's what Kobe wanted to be, but that's not LeBron.
Well, and that's difficult for me because you also, what is the right basketball play? Like with LeBron, I feel like even if you're Jordan, if you're whomever, I know he could take over a game, but passing it to someone for a layup 9 times out of 10 is the right basketball play. Even if you're a lethal player and you're, I feel more comfortable even with Jordan passing it even though he made all the shots, I would feel more comfortable if he passed it to someone for an easy layup.
But if his arm stretches 50 foot out,
that is true.
It doesn't really matter, does it?
That is true.
Exactly. He just kind of laid it in himself.
Yeah, and if the game is nothing but dunks, like.
Yeah. I mean, and also, quite frankly, I'm pretty upset because I always root against LeBron, and I don't want to be the one on here like trying to defend him, and that makes me feel very uncomfortable.
you know what is funny, though? All that being said, I think LeBron has more buzzer beaters than like everybody but Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, I think.
But if you get your team to a certain point, you don't need a buzzer beater, right?
There you go.
If you're so up by 10, a buzzer beater.
His clutchness is underrated. I will give him that. But it's the mentality that I think causes people not to like. And that's actually – I'm probably the one on this pod that would defend LeBron the most. I don't hate him like you guys do. I mean, I don't particularly like him. I don't root for his teams, but I respect his ability.
I just don't think he's
Michael Jordan, or will he ever be.
I think that's a lot of what causes it, Bud, is you see so many of the comparisons between the two, and I think that's what causes a lot of the negative feelings towards him, is because there are those that try to compare the two, and it's just not a thing, and it's not a disrespect to what LeBron is talent-wise. There's no denying that, but there's no comparing the two as well.
So
I get tired of being told what to think about LeBron.
That's a great point. Yeah, because I think that's kind of what I was going to go with. Like, let's say LeBron was like Spurs Kawhi Leonard, okay? Like, he just went to work. He was great. You know, he just played basketball and then didn't ever say anything, didn't have the decision, didn't have all of this polarizing things that he's done over the years. He just went, played basketball at a high level and just brought his lunch pail to work every day. Do you think that LeBron would be – more people would like LeBron today than, you know, him being such a polarizing figure? You either love him or you hate him. Or would it be the same thing? Like, people are always going to hate him just because he's the best player in the NBA. He's not on my team, so I don't like him.
Well, that's hard because there are quite a few people that don't like Kawhi because of what he did to San Antonio. And right. I feel like, and leaving and the way he handled that situation. So I think even if he did that, the fact that he keeps leaving to go to join these other players, I think, is what really rubs people the wrong way. Because Kawhi,
personally,
is not
you look at a lot of it too, where I think a lot of people don't like the drama that surrounds LeBron. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, and it's not just the flopping. It's the I got poked in the eye. I need to sit for 10 weeks. You know, this, that, and the other thing. Meanwhile, Jordan goes out and plays with the flu. And it's just, you know, I tweaked an ankle. You better write me off for the rest of the season. I mean, and then the flopping and then this. There's a lot more drama that surrounds, whereas Jordan just got out there and balled. I don't know. I guess everything for Jordan was focusing on the basketball. And with LeBron, it's a lot more than just straight up basketball.
I don't have a lack of respect for LeBron. What he is accomplishing is historic, all right? LeBron James is a historic player. He's definitely in the top five all time, right, in my opinion. And I do not actually put him above Kareem. I do not put him above Michael Jordan. I would say it's an argument, you know, for Magic. I think he's right up there. He's in the higher echelons of the game. Now, why do we have to anoint him as the chosen one, the greatest of all time, when frankly the results are just not there? He's had a great run, but it could have been unbelievable. It could have been the greatest on top of the greatest. It could have been the cherry on top of greatest. He doesn't have that. It's not going to happen.
Well, if he was – I mean, look at Kobe, right? Like the Kobe, when he was with the Lakers, you know, they had lots of series with the Thunder in the playoffs where I was like, you know, Kobe would go nuts, you know, and I hated that, but I never like disliked Kobe, you know, even though he never played on a team I liked, you know, I never had a problem with Kobe, you know, I was never like, oh, I really don't like him or whatever, you know, I always thought he was cool, you know. So what's different about him versus LeBron then? You know, and that's obviously, that's easy to say, and we don't have to get into all of it, but that's my point. And it's not like Kobe never said anything, you know, it's not like Kobe, and Kobe had scandals. I mean, he had Colorado, right? But, you know, LeBron doesn't have that, you know, so you would think it would be even easier for LeBron to maybe appeal to a wider base, but, you know, because of how he carries himself in other ways, you know, also, he lost that. But
sometimes you don't have the answer for it. Sometimes people just rub other people the wrong way. I mean, LeBron was universally loved until he went to the Heat. When he was with Cleveland, he was universally loved for the most part. And then he went to the Heat, and the whole not one, not two, not three, that whole thing happened. And then he was universally hated. So, and since then, it's because it's, I feel like it keeps going back and forth, because then he went back to Cleveland and he was loved for the most part. And then he went to LA and he's hated again. So I feel like it's just kind of a back and forth with him.
I think you have it. I think he just needed to stay with Cleveland. The decision is what really got him.
If he had stayed with Cleveland originally, he would not be, people would not
think Kobe was a Lakers entire career. If LeBron would have stayed with the Cavs, I think people would love him a lot more.
Yeah.
Even if he had less titles.
Even if he had just stayed with Cavs the Cavs the second time.
Kobe's weird to me. Because
I mean, look at Durant. I mean, LeBron became a heel when he went to the Heat, right? And he embraced it because he didn't know how else to do it. He started wearing the black headband, and they were like the villains. Well, look at Durant. Once he left the Thunder, he became the villain, and now he's gone weird and like can't. Everybody loved Kevin Durant when he was on the Thunder. Like, even if you weren't a Thunder fan, you loved Durant. He was like doing tornado relief. He didn't have fake Twitter accounts. He wasn't like an a-hole to the media. But then as soon as he goes to the Warriors, everybody hated him. And now
he's
been a heel ever since. And LeBron didn't go full heel like Durant did, but it's similar.
The thing about Kobe to me is that he had those, you know, it's, if you looked at his career, he played for just one team. He played for the Lakers, which automatically makes him a villain. He had like three careers, actually four careers, and it was transitioning. The early part, he was just a sidekick. He was a Scottie Pippen to Shaq, basically. Great player, and obviously you recognized he was a great player. But those first three titles, it was Shaq. It was the Shaq show. He was the MVP. He was the finals MVP. He was the best player in the NBA. Then the transition started happening. And when you had the Karl Malone, whatever the hell that was, you know, that all went away. And it's just Kobe. And he was a baller. He was scoring, you know, 80 points a game there during that era. But something strange happened along the way. He sort of became human. And the Lakers weren't good during that phase. And it seemed like he kind of came to a Jesus moment where, you know, like around circa 2007, when he realized he needed help and he needed people to actually like him and actually want to come play with him. And he became something kind of more interesting. In 2008, 2009, I remember I actually kind of was rooting for the Lakers in a few of those series because I liked Kobe all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. It was kind of weird.
So there are a few more things. I have a few casting what ifs, and I want you to think about, instead of Wayne Knight as Stan, the director wanted either Michael J. Fox or Chevy Chase. What are your thoughts about those?
Chevy Chase. I don't think either one of them would have.
Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase is actually tall. He's actually, I think, 6'5".
I like Chevy Chase, too. But
I thought about Chevy Chase in the Bill Murray role, if they couldn't have gotten Bill Murray. I think Bill Murray does a great job, but I think Chevy Chase could have done that role in this movie.
Both of them were too big of stars. Both of them were too big of stars at that point to play that.
I love Chevy Chase, but I don't see him in that role.
No, Chevy Chase can always pull off the asshole and the dick, but to say the line, "Oh, I'm friends with the producer," that's total Bill Murray. Yeah. The line only works because it's Bill Murray.
Was Chris Farley still alive then? Chris Farley might have been a good one for that role.
You know, Chris Farley would have been fantastic in the Wayne Knight role.
That's a good.
He would have been less annoying.
He would have been fantastic in that. And actually been funny.
There apparently, I'm not 100% sure if this is true, but this is what I found. There were also attempts to replace Jordan's character actor with a more experienced actor, but, and I quote, we couldn't find anyone better. Which, since Jordan, his whole story about baseball and come back to the NBA was such a huge part of the plot, I don't understand what they were thinking of going with. Unless it was another athlete.
It would have ruined the entire movie.
Does this explain why it's not his children in the movie? That they had already decided that they're going to not cast Michael Jordan. So.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That's why I always thought it was his kids, because they were like such spares, as we say, you know.
Because they're bad actors.
I'm like, it's not like they're great actors. I thought they were his kids.
No, they were actual actors.
They're run-of-the-mill child actors.
Yeah.
So. I have a few reviews. On Rotten Tomatoes, 63% of audience gave it a positive review. 43% of critics gave it a positive review. Roger Ebert said, Space Jam is a happy marriage of good ideas. Three films for the price of one, giving us a comic treatment of the career adventures Michael Jordan crossed with Looney Tunes cartoon and some showbiz warfare. It entertains kids at one level while giving their parents a lot to smile at too. It's an inspired way to use and kid Jordan's image while at the same time updating Bugs Bunny and company to doing battle in the multi-zillion dollar animation sweepstakes. The result is delightful, a family movie in the best sense, which means the adults will enjoy it too. So Roger Ebert liked Space Jam.
He liked it. That shocked me. I didn't think he would. Yeah.
Lisa Schwarzbaum from Entertainment Weekly said, this mediocrity disguised as entertainment, this greed promoted as synergy, this, to paraphrase that seminal media study, Broadcast News, is what the devil looks like. It's Tasmanian, and it's coming to a multiplex near you. That is not so positive.
Are you sure she wasn't reviewing the second movie?
Yeah, I know. That's
I don't know. Out of 23 bottles of Michael Jordan secret stuff, what would you give this movie?
I'd give it a 13 and a half. It's good enough that you'd watch with your kids, probably, but you're not going to sit there by yourself and watch it as an adult. Probably not. Fair. I mean, I probably would have never watched it again if it wasn't for this podcast.
Unless you're me. I watched it like a year ago by myself.
Yeah, there you go.
So only me.
I give it 20 bottles out of 23, which I like the 23 obligatory number for Jordan. Yes, I noticed that. That's good. Yeah, no, I like it because I think that as a kid's movie, it's great. Like the pacing, you know, yeah, it's the story kind of like, sure, whatever. It was a kid's movie in the 90s, no less. Okay. Like Home Alone 2 was basically Home Alone 1 just in New York. Hey, it even hit all the same beats, you know. So kids movies having intricate plots. I mean, this was before pre-Pixar, right? Or maybe there was just Toy Story at that point. I don't know. But as far as like pacing goes, I mean, it moves quickly from one scene to the next, you know, before you know it, you're 43 minutes into the movie and then you've got the final scene. So yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's a good movie. It's fun and it's iconic. It may not be a great film per se. It's kind of a mile marker for the 90s, I think, as far as like sports and the combination of sports and movies in Hollywood and stuff.
Give it a 9. Just based on nostalgia alone. If Ethan would want to watch this, and of course I'll watch it, but really it's strange to me because in my head going into it, I was actually kind of psyched and talking it up. You know, I even go, Michelle, I was like, yeah, actually I remember this actually being kind of funny. And Bill Murray's in it. Kind of remember the jokes actually being, you know, humorous. And I love Looney Tunes. She loves Looney Tunes. By the midpoint of it, we're just kind of like bored with it. It's not really watching Looney Tunes. It's not really watching a basketball movie per se. It's a very bizarre children's movie. And I agree with Josh here on this. It is iconic. It's one of those seminal moments, I think, in our generation's, you know, coming of being and what makes you a millennial, you know, what actually makes you part of this group. We all knew what Space Jam is. But outside of that, yeah, the movie's a mess.
I'm going to go 15. I think it was a cool concept for the time, kind of, especially when you consider that the technology for all the CGI and all that was not at the level, even close to the level of now, and how they were able to blend it and all that. There were some definite weak points of the movie, but I think there is some nostalgia and that kind of holds up. Just
having, you know, two characters like Jordan and Bugs Bunny, the nostalgia of those two, I think, hold the movie up a little higher than it would have been with any other main characters, so to speak. But it's decent, but I'm not sure I'm going to go and make a point to watch it every year.
When we did the intro to the podcast, our very first episode, I mentioned that I thought of this as a guilty pleasure because I deep down know it's probably not a good movie, but my nostalgia always takes over. So I think I do know that. However, my nostalgia glasses take over when I watch the movie. So I'm going to give it a 19 and a half, maybe 20, maybe around where Josh is, because I absolutely still love this movie and watch it at least every couple of years. And it's always been one of my favorite. It's probably my top five of the sports movies, honestly, to this day, that I'll watch. But I also know that it's probably deep down not a good movie. But when it's all said and done, I don't care. I love it. But yeah, and I'm kind of glad. I feel like this is the first movie we've had that has had such different opinions on. Usually we've been around the same area, like we really liked it, or we're kind of in the middle. And I feel like this one's the first one we've had that is all over the place, which I enjoy having these differing opinions. So that's awesome. Dan was going to make his triumphant return to the podcast for this episode. However, Dan had a ruptured disc in his neck. He had a 90-minute procedure, disc replacement surgery, but he will be the host in July. He has told us, but he wasn't able to be here because he's in a brace and in probably all kinds of medication at this particular moment, which might have been for a fun part of the podcast to have a medicated Dan up here. But he has said he will be the host in July, so I'm not sure what he's picked, but we will let everyone know as soon as we know. If you want to find out, we will definitely say which movie he's picked. Follow SportsFlix, Just Give Us Clicks on Facebook, and at SportsFlixPod on Instagram and Twitter. And we will announce the movie on those platforms. Thank you, guys, for this lively discussion. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. See you next time.
See you, world.